Welcome to Grit Nation, the Building Trades Podcast. I'm Joe Cadwell, the writer, producer, and host of the show. Today I have the pleasure of speaking with Ken Rusk. Ken is a blue-collar career choice advocate, construction industry entrepreneur, and the author of Blue Collar Cash, which details how you can love your work, secure your future, and find happiness for life. We'll start today's conversation by learning about Ken's background and how his passion for hard work and construction earned him the nickname the Million Dollar Ditch Digger. We'll then unpack the lessons Ken learned from a lifetime in the trades that have enabled him to write his book and how these lessons have been useful in his current role as a life coach and mentor to those interested in pursuing a career as a blue-collar tradesperson. Next, we'll discuss the downside of buying into the oversold notion that the only pathway to professional pride and financial security is through a college degree, and why now more than ever blue-collar jobs and the people who can do the work are in such great demand. Later, Ken will explain the importance of detailed visualization in helping you map out a future that will bring you comfort, peace, and freedom. And we'll end our conversation by learning what Ken's definition of success is and why he is so passionate about helping people achieve their dreams, regardless of their educational background or past. Afterward, be sure to check out the show notes to find out more about Ken, his message, and his book, Blue Collar Cash. And now, on to the show. Ken Rusk, welcome to Grit Nation.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Ken. Thank you for taking your time to be on the show. I understand you're a pretty busy guy. The book seems like it's blowing up for you right now. And I want to start off our conversation by asking, why did you write Blue Collar Cash?
Well, you know, it was one of those things where it kind of was born of necessity. You know, I've been doing this business, which, you know, we're I guess you would call us glorified ditch diggers. And we've been doing that for about 3 or 4 decades now. And in that time, I had to hire a lot of people. A lot of them, it might have been their first or second job. So I found myself having to do a lot of coaching, you know, their first checking account, their first credit card, their first car, their first apartment, getting their driver's license straightened out, all those kinds of things that happen to younger people. And the more the coaching went on, the more we, again, out of necessity to try to hire and attract people into a great culture, we had to build a great culture. And part of that was a lot of intensive coaching, not only for their current, but their future lives. And it just got, it kind of spiraled from there. People said, you know, what you do works so well, you need to take it beyond the four walls of your company. And I started jotting down some notes and telling some stories of some friends of mine. And pretty soon we had a manuscript and there it went.
So why do you think our younger people or people that are considering exploring blue collar trades are so underprepared to step into this sort of world? I know myself, having gone to high school 35 plus years ago, you know, everyone was gearing us towards either college or, in my case, the military. But there wasn't a whole lot of emphasis put on the blue collar trades. And I think people were just expected if you didn't go to college, you were just going to jump into it and things would take off for you. But it sounds like there is a steep learning curve, regardless of what you do once you exit our educational system.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I call it like a perfect storm. There was two or three different influences that created what we have today, which I call a blue collar crisis, actually. And I think the first thing was, you know, somebody's idea to get rid of shop class in high school, where, you know, kids accidentally discovered, you know, the great careers of, you know, plumbing and electrical and carpentry and masonry and home economics and mechanics and all those things. And we replaced those rooms with computers, which, again, computers are essential for all of us to know. I get that. But why did it have to be a binary choice, meaning one or the other? Why didn't we have both of those things? So that was the first thing. I think also as kids begin to grow up, and when I was younger, we built tree forts in the backyard. We got hammers and nails and we got, you know, lumber that we could find and we built a tree fort. Well, now they're building, you know, cities on Minecraft on their cell phones. And it's just not the same, the whole step back moment kind of feel. And then I think, you know, between parents and colleges, they're really, really good at this default mechanism, which means, you know, I've raised my kid, I have to clothe my kid, I have to bathe them, I have to feed them, and then I have to send them to college. as if it's an automatic default process. And you and I both know that college isn't the only path to success. There's many other paths, and you know, we're here to talk about that today. So
yeah, it seems like we've lost a lot of the creativity to think outside the box that everyone tells us to not find ourselves in. And you're right, the default mechanism is just go to college. Figure out what you want to do when you get to college. And as everyone knows, college is a horribly expensive place to try to figure out what you want to do, unless you're actually after a degree, an education that requires a degree, like a doctor or a lawyer. To just go there and sort of explore the possibilities of life at $40,000 or $60,000 a year seems like a real disservice to these young people to find themselves in a financial hardship as soon as they begin the next step of their life. And that's why I think it's so important that people like you are rising to the challenge, saying, hey, there are other viable alternatives out there. There's Blue is the New White. Josh Solon has written a great book. I've had Josh on the show last year. I stumbled across your book, fortunately, and had a chance to read through that. And you've just got so much insight and wisdom and personal experience. So let's take it back just a step if we can, Ken. Your personal experience, I understand you used to cut through a particular construction yard on your way to school, and you became sort of enamored with that yard. Can you tell us a little bit more about that, your backstory?
Yeah. That, thank you for asking that. There was a fence that connected my high school to an industrial park, and we would always go after school, we'd go hang out at the carryout like kids did, and we would cut through this fence. And you know, there was always going through these different industrial buildings and whatnot. There was always a lot of action and energy and people milling about. You know, there was things that every young man liked. There was, you know, tow motors and backhoes and dump trucks and guys all over the place and, you know, energy. And it was just a neat place. So one day I went in and I said, what do you guys do here? And they basically said, well, we're ditch diggers. I mean, we dig up old foundations for houses and we fix them up and put it all back together. So I said, you know, I need money to go, you know, bowling or get pizza or take my girlfriend out like anybody else. So I can do that. And I jumped into that work and I started doing, you know, digging ditches in the summertime. And in the wintertime, I worked in the office when I was in school still. So we continued that for a while, and then it grew into a position where I could, you know, lead the men for a while, and that was really great. And then we grew into a management scenario where we were starting to open franchises, and they sent me around the country to open up these new little incubator offices all around the country. And I did that for a few years, and finally moved into my own. And now here I am in Ohio with two locations and about 200 employees. So it's really been a great ride.
So Ken, there's plenty of ditch diggers out in the world, but not everyone can be called the $1 million ditch digger. So what separates you, the $1 million ditch digger, from the rest of the ditch diggers that are out there that are not making millions, that are definitely working hard just like you did? But what is your recipe? What was the X factor that allowed you to take your understanding and hard work and tenacity and turn that into a very successful, lucrative career?
Well, that's a really great question. And just so everybody knows, I didn't necessarily label myself the $1 million ditch digger. That was the people that helped me helped me publish the book, and that they put that out there. I'm a little more modest than that, but you know, hey, I have to do what they say sometimes. But for me, it was really simple. You know, I kind of knew the things I wanted my life to look like. I knew what kind of, I wanted to get a car and I wanted to get a house and I wanted to, you know, to do these types of things. I loved to water ski. I wanted to buy a boat. So, I mean, there was a lot of things that I wanted to do. I was into weightlifting and into golf. And, you know, there was just a lot of things that I could see myself doing in the future. And I realized that when you're working with your own two hands, okay, which out of the 165 million people in the United States, about 70 million people do that in the workforce. I liked being outside working with my hands because I could control my input, which meant I could control the output, and which means I could control my finances and the quality of all that. And I don't think I'm any different than anybody else. I think when you talk about being an entrepreneur, there's probably nine characteristics that make up entrepreneurs. And I believe Joe, that every one of us has those within us. We just need a reason to have those come out. And to me, it was all about seeing what I wanted my future to be and then making it very crystal clear and defined and then going after it.
And in regards to your understanding or knowing what your future wanted to be, I understand you use visualization a lot. And as an athlete myself, I know the power of visualization and actually just taking that time to sort of reflect and see how you want the your free throw to look or your golf swing to look or your batting stance and the follow through. You use visualization and you use a methodology using paper and crayons, from what I understand, to help people actually map out what they see their future to be. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, you know, it all began years ago when I was doing some coaching, and basically I would get a big poster board and I would say, okay, what do you see your future looking like? Like, what's your nirvana? What is your, I call it in the book, Blue Collar Cash, I call it, what's your comfort, peace, and freedom look like? And it's real simple. I mean, you basically start to sketch what kind of car you'd want. What is it, a truck, pickup truck, or a minivan, or a car, or a scooter, or a motorcycle, or electric vehicle? You know, what kind of house do you want to live in? Out in the country, in the suburbs, maybe downtown in a condo or an apartment? What is your health moment? Like, what do you do for yourself to keep yourself healthy? Describe that in great detail. What is your hobbies? What is your sports? What might your pet be? Is it a cat or a dog or something else? And if so, what would you name it? What color would it be? I mean, we really get detailed down into what you want your life to look like. And pretty soon you kind of have this collage or this puzzle or this drawing of, yeah, that would be really cool. You know, what would my vacation look like? I draw all this stuff out and then I can kind of have a path to follow to get there. You know, you've never left the driveway, Joe, in your car, put it in drive and said, okay, where the heck am I going? You know, you always have a destination. And I think life should be that way in all of its facets, because then that drives us almost involuntarily towards the completion of those things. And we all get to live better lives that way.
Yeah. And actually writing it down or drawing it down, making that plan, can definitely help you kind of build a roadmap for your future. I pulled this straight out of your book, Ken. You had written that 80% of us have no goals at all. So 80% of us have no goals at all. 16% of us have goals, but don't document them in any way. Okay. 4% write down their goals. 1% pay attention to their written goals. And the same 1% earns about 8 times more income than the other 99%. And I think that's amazing. The power of this visualization, the power of setting goals, knowing what you want and how to get there, setting the pathway for success. And I think that's huge. Now, you had mentioned comfort, peace, and freedom when you were talking about setting goals or visualization of what your life would want to be. What is comfort, peace, and freedom? Let's start with comfort. What does comfort mean to you, sir?
Well, comfort means a lot of things. It doesn't just mean the really nice couch. I mean, it's, are you comfortable with who you are? Are you comfortable with your surroundings? Are you comfortable with what you need to be to make yourself happy? I mean, we all have to look in the mirror and set this parameter for ourselves. I mean, again, we're not all going to aspire to be, you know, own a McMansion and be a huge yacht and 15 cars. I mean, every one of us has this level where we could say, man, if I could do that, that would really make me feel comfortable. I mean, that would be like my place. So what happens is when you take comfort like that, there follows a sense of peace, a sense of calm. And I talk about that, the lack of stress, a sense of just having a well-being about, man, my life is in a really great place. I'm designing it the way I want it, and I'm getting it the way I want it, and I'm in control of that, and that's awesome. And when you combine those two things, that opens up a certain amount of freedom for you to do things on a spontaneous level, where otherwise you get so wrapped up in life and being busy that you lose the ability to be spontaneous and just make some cool thing happen for yourself, like take your dog for a walk or go give back to a charity or do some of the things that we do, you know, call someone that you love and miss, or just some of those things that busyness kind of like screens us from doing. So yeah, I think comfort, peace, and freedom is like a triangle. All those things interrelate to each other. And, you know, freedom isn't necessarily freedom as in the United States citizen sense, although that's a fantastic thing that we have. It's freedom in the sense of your whole being and who you are as a person, and to be able to look in the mirror and go, wow, you know, I'm one of those people who've got it. I've got life licked. You know what I mean? I've got this thing won, and I worked really, really hard to get there and to make that happen.
No, I agree 100% that freedom, the autonomy to just sort of control your own life, not be beholden to other people, either financially or just mentally, you know, bound by someone else's belief system.
Right.
It's huge. Now, along with that comfort, peace, and freedom, there are times, though, when things aren't going to quite go the way you visualize them or the way you would hope for them or the way you've been building towards, and you have those hard times befall you. How does that, in your mind, build strength and character? And what have you dug deep into, Ken, during your life to overcome these adverse challenges?
Well, you know, there's so many things. I'll just use a real simple example. You're digging a hole, and I've done a lot of that. I've planted thousands of trees. I've dug lots of ditches. I've done all these things. Invariably, you're digging a hole, you're going to run into a root, okay? Something that's trying to stop you. And what do? You have to work around that, okay? So there's a challenge. You see it, boom, you jump on the shovel, you almost break your ankle, you fall off the shovel, and you're like, wow, what was that? You just have to work your way around that, either by getting a stronger piece of equipment or finding another position or whatever you need to do to make that thing happen. And I think persistence and resilience, which are two of the main characteristics of an entrepreneur, I think those two things really do build character because, you know, you've always heard people say, if at first you don't succeed, try again. But it's the try again part that really gets you to become, you know, adaptive. Okay. So, you know, if you run into a wall the first time, it's like, okay, I'm going to go around, I'm going to go under, I'm going to go over, I'm going to do these things. And it's that type of resilience that creates the one percenters that you were just talking about. And the best part about that, Joe, which I think is the joy of this whole process, is anybody can do that. Anybody can grab a piece of paper, write down their goals, tape them up to their bathroom mirror, and then have their brain through osmosis almost naturally attract themselves to the completion of those goals. And it's such a powerful tool. It doesn't cost a dime, and anybody can do this. That's why when I share this stuff and they say, well, you're one of those lucky entrepreneurs, I'm like, no, anybody can do this as long as you have a reason. So find out what your why is, and you'll be there.
Now, a quick break in the action for a word from our sponsor. Today's episode is brought to you by our friends over at Union Home Plus. Union Home Plus has been in the business since 2002, helping Northwest Carpenter families, just like yours, save money when they buy, sell, or finance their home. If you've been listening to the show for a while, you've probably heard me talk with Patrick Town, the Director of Operations over at Union Home Plus. Patrick and his team of finance and real estate professionals are dedicated to helping you make the right decisions with what many consider to be the cornerstone of the American dream, home ownership. For more information, be sure to check out the show notes in today's episode or visit unionhomeplus.org on the web. Union Home Plus, helping Northwest Carpenter families find their way home for nearly 20 years. And now back to the show. That sounds like great advice. And I know you've done a lot of coaching over the years since starting your company, and it's sort of culminating now with the creation of your book, and I'm sure books to follow. There's a saying that I hope I don't mess it up too much, but if you come across a post someday, and on top of that post, there's a potato, right? One thing you can pretty much guarantee is that potato did not get on top of that post by itself, right? There's always going to be some help along the way to get it there. And you talk about entrepreneurial spirit, and that so much of that comes from your own personal desire, but it really does take a team in order to get everyone successful. How do you get team buy-in? How do you get people that you work with to buy into your vision to make you successful, and along the way to buoy them up as well and make them successful? Where does that come from?
This is probably the single greatest thing that I've ever stumbled across, and or some people say invented or whatever. But, you know, to me, if you asked the people in our office and you said, what does Ken say more than anything else when he's talking to you? And I've done a lot of meetings over the years. They will say, what he tells us is that Ken can't get what he wants, nor can his company get what he wants until all of us get what we want first. And that is an absolute truth. I mean, if you think about it, you have everyone in this company doing a piece or a part, making some part of the whole happen. And that all has to happen before the company can actually create, you know, a sale or create an installation or create a payment or a revenue stream. So for me, I found a long time ago that I don't mind if the people working in our organization are working from a very selfish place, meaning I'm here to get what I want for myself and my life and my family, and I'm going to do this and help Ken along the way. So they're the priority. Their futures are the priority, not mine, because I won't have a future if they don't. So to me, it's all about let's set a bunch of goals. Let's live a life that's full of anticipation, meaning like when you set up a vacation, right? That might be 6 months from now. And you think about, okay, I'm going to Florida. I'm going to go to the beach. I'm going to get my sandals and my bathing suit and my magazine and my lounge chair, my towel, my drink. It's going to feel great. The sun's going to be, you know, beating down on me, maybe some breeze off the ocean. And you actually relive that for months before you go. Well, why are vacations the only thing that we anticipate? We should be anticipating houses and cars and maybe learning to speak another language and giving back to a charity or making ourselves the best us we can be through hobbies or sports or health. We should be anticipating every one of those things the same way we anticipate a vacation. And when you do that, you just kind of have this flow going and you just kind of flow through life with this kind of real sense of, again, comfort, peace, and freedom that you don't get if you're under all this stress of what's next and how am I going to do it?
Right. And that flow state is super important. And it is something that is worthy of striving for. And again, as a leader, you realize that your flow state is so dependent on the morale and attitude of the people that you are leading to get you there, to get you all there. Sort of that collective accountability, I think you mentioned in the book. You know, when everyone is responsible for their part, everyone's going to be successful. We're going to see through the rough times.
Yeah, you know, there's an important point to that. You know, especially in this day and age where someone can come into your company and they passed probably 15 or 20 help wanted signs getting to your front door. Okay. So they have a lot of options and a lot of choices. And it used to be where it was like the old Neanderthal thinking, you know, I am boss, you are employee, you will do what I say. Why should I hire you? Now it's a little different. Now when they come in, they're almost saying, hey, what's in it for me to work here? And I'm okay with that because if I can answer that question, I'll have a self-motivated, self-directed, self-managing, goal-crushing individual that's going to help my company get way further than I can do it on my own. And that's why I think, you know, the bosses out there, they need to really think about maybe parking that ego that they have relative to running a company and allowing the people that work there to really grow for themselves, and you will benefit much more so than if you just try to do everything on your own.
That's for sure. And in your book, you mentioned a work partner, Tim. What can you tell us about Tim and Tim's story and how you two developed a relationship in your company?
He is actually the very first person I ever did a coaching session with. And this was back in 1987. He was a young man. He was just recently married. He was expecting a child. There was problems with the pregnancy and medical bills. And he was in this apartment and he came to me and he said, I just don't know how I'm going to get out of this cycle. So we literally took markers and crayons and a piece of paper. And we wrote down, what would you like to your life to look like? And, you know, he thought, well, I need to get a working car because this car I have is breaking down. So we started saving for a pickup truck together. And then we started saving for a piece of land that we bought on land contract from a farmer. And he paid that off over time. And then he got some money together and he started building this house. And then now he had four kids and some went to college and some didn't. Some went to the military. Thank God for that. And so it was this kind of culmination of, one success after another because we just talked about it and we kept it in front of us, like we taped it on the mirror and it was always there. And I'm happy to say, I mean, I met with him this morning. He's been here 36 years now, I think, and 35 years. And he was the very first one I ever coached. And that's why I made sure to put him in the book as a way of thanking him, because he's an amazing human being. And, you know, it's funny because as a boss, and I hate to use that word, but as a boss, he wants to thank me and give me credit for helping him do all this. And I look back and say, listen, man, I had like maybe 2% to do with all this. You were the other 98. So, you know, live well and be happy for it.
Absolutely. That's a great story. And I found a lot of pleasure in reading that, you know, in Tim's success. And so I'm glad I had a chance to talk with you about it. Ken, you know, going back to where we first started, you know, both of us are pretty much not anti-college. It's a great place to go if you know what you want to do in life. But you had written a couple of sections in there that kind of address some of the shortcomings that our current educational system finds in helping people manage their money and doing budgeting and the importance of compounding interest. Why did you decide to put all that into Blue Collar Cash?
Well, first of all, that's two different questions, and I love them. The first one is, you know, I'm not an anti-college guy. If you're going to operate on my shoulder or manage money or teach somebody something or, you know, maybe design a skyscraper, you're going to need to know everything that there is to know about that particular thing. Okay. On the other hand, if you're just going because someone told you you have to go, you know, why amass all that debt if you have no real reason for being there? I mean, if you think about it, they say that up to 25% of people, that have gone to college, 40% of whom didn't have any idea why they were going, but 25% of them changed their major after 2 years. And then another 33% of them never work in the field that they studied. And here they are with all this debt, and they have this degree in European English translation that they can't use for anything, and they owe all this money. And it just doesn't make any sense to me. It's an inefficient system. Unless you know exactly why you're going. If you're going to go be a doctor or a lawyer, then bam, go do that. I think that's fantastic. That's really part of the whole thing with college. I'm not against it. You just really need to know why you're going there. And if you couple that part up with the fact that, my gosh, I mean, I think they said the other day, I put it in the book, and it might be improving now, but at that point, for every five electricians that was retiring, only one was coming online. And that's simple supply and demand, Joe. I mean, if supply gets low and demand gets high, then that's where the money goes. And in Toledo, anyway, we have carpenters and plumbers and electricians making as much as lawyers and engineers. And it's crazy how well they're doing. And you know, the timing is perfect for that.
Going bank gangbusters during the COVID era, for sure. And the ever-widening skills gap in the U.S. and Canada is apparent. And it's just not in the blue, or I shouldn't say the blue-collar trades, the building trades, but all across the board, bus drivers, nurses, even airline pilots, the people that are sure. Really wanting to get out and put in the hard work and the time are in short supply. And so along with all those newfound riches, I noticed in the book that you had put in some insight on budgeting and money management and the effects of compound interest. And I thought that was fantastic to help people that are maybe considering this career path that, wow, you know, I do have the ability to start preparing for the financially for the long haul. And the advice you put in there was magic. Why did you decide to put that in?
Well, you know, I looked at it from two ways. Either A, you're the person working for someone else, or B, you're the person who has people working for them. A typical 401k is such a win-win for both the employer and the employee. I don't think most people know this, and this falls under the category of, man, I wish someone would have told me this when I was younger, right? If you put $60 a week away into a 401k account when you're 21 or 22, you only have to do that for 10 years, which is about $3,300 a year or $33,000 over the 10-year period. And then you can stop doing that. And by the time you retire, you're going to have over $1 million in your 401k account. I don't think if you went on the street today, Joe, and asked people that scenario, half of them wouldn't believe it. The other half would say, well, why hasn't anybody told me that before? So I specifically you know, we have a million, we have what we call a 401k millionaire club here, where we put everyone into the 401k. We put their first dollar in, not their last dollar. Okay. So it that gets paid before anything else. And what's great about that is these are 19, 20, 21 year old kids who now that they can go to their friend's house or the bar or whatever, and they can say, "Hey man, my retirement is handled. I don't even have to think about it anymore." So that felt, again, it was one of those things where I'm like, why isn't this being taught everywhere? You know, so we can rely less on entitlements and stuff that, you know, government largesse or whatever, and we can be responsible for ourselves, right? I mean, I don't want to rely on somebody else. I want to rely on me. So if I can create a situation where I've got a $1 million account that only costs me $30,000, I mean, that's unbelievable. So if you pair that up with the budgeting I put in there, it shows you how to live with carving out that first $60 and then living with the rest of the budget the way you lay it out. And I got to tell you, there's no more powerful tool than to set yourself off in an unstressful situation financially, which again, brings you all that comfort, peace, and freedom you're looking for.
It all makes sense, and it's common sense, and you're right. Why don't we teach more common sense to our kids? Warren Buffett, arguably one of the richest men in the world, you know, made the majority of his money through compound interest, and it came later on. But Warren had been investing since he was 10 years old, from what I understand. But your advice is fantastic. I'm going to hit you up on one more piece of insight. Someday versus today. You mentioned that in the book, someday versus today. Someday people and today people. What's the difference between the two?
You know, it's just an accidental mindset. You know, I think people have good intentions. I don't think anyone wants to be a couch potato or whatever, but it's just the way that the words come out, because it's much easier to say, you know, someday I'm going to go back and build that deck behind the house, or someday I'm going to do this, or someday I'm going to do that. Whenever someone uses the word someday to me, I always say, well, when is that? Because someday really never comes. If you think about, you know, the bar is going to serve you free drinks someday. Well, that never happens, right? You see those signs up there.
And, free beer and tomorrow.
A free beer tomorrow. So I really wanted to put it out there that, you know, you have control over the things that you do. And if you really want to get a goal to happen for yourself, you need to put that into action, and you need to do that right now. Okay. You need to do that today. So, you know, for all of your listeners out there, next time someone says, "Hey, you know what? We should go to lunch. Someday let's go to lunch." I want you to pull out your phone, get out your calendar and say, "Okay, when do you want to do that?" And watch the look on their face as though, "Oh my gosh, we're really doing this." Well, isn't that the way you're supposed to live your life? I mean, because trust me when I say this, someday never shows up.
That makes sense. So, Ken Rusk, what's your definition of success?
Oh my gosh, I think I've said it a few times here. I can look in the mirror and say to myself, man, I have created everything I wanted to create for my life. I don't want for anything. I don't have any stress. I don't have any financial issues. I've set myself up to be very, very calm at this point in my life, which is really cool. But I think for anybody else, it is, can you find meaning in who you are, not in who everybody else is or who everybody else wants you to be? Can you look in the mirror and find out what is going to work best to make you the whole person that you want to be? Because there are 1,000 different levels of success. I know a lot of rich people that are miserable. Okay. So set yourself up in a way that you see yourself living a really, really cool life. And yeah, you'll have what I call success for sure.
All right. Great answer. And I know yourself, you're a mentor, you're a coach, you're an author, you're a successful business owner. And I know you're a very charitable guy as well, from what I understand. Would you mind sharing a little bit about your charitable efforts? I know you're a humble guy as well, so I don't want you to toot your horn too much, but I know you're involved heavily into the Ronald McDonald House. Is that correct? And another
one? Yeah, we do quite a bit. We work with Ronald McDonald House. We also work a lot with Make-A-Wish. And recently we're working with Junior Achievement. You know, one of the things that that I wanted to make sure is that this wasn't just a book that you read and put up on the shelf like some trophy and then you forgot about it 3 weeks later. So we created a course that follows along the book that anyone can take. I don't care if you're 15 or 50, you can take this course and it'll actually change who you are and it'll change how you think and how you look at the rest of your life. And it's a pretty cool thing to see what we're doing with kids today. And even, you know, I had a gentleman who said he was a sales rep for a medical company. He's 52. He's miserable. He loved plumbing when he was younger, so he went back to it, and he's never been happier. So, yeah, we're trying to change people's lives every day, any way we can here.
Great stuff. Well, thank you so much, Ken. This has been a fantastic conversation. Ken, where can people go to find out more about you and your book?
Well, you can go to kenrusk.com, and you'll see what we're up to there. You can go to kenrusk.com/path, which is where the course lives. And you can also find us on Ken Rusk Official on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter and all that. And again, you know, one of the things I always like to tell people is I donate all the proceeds of the course and the book back to charity. So I'm not in that part for the money. I'm in this to help people, because to whom much is given, much is expected. And I've been very blessed and I'm very grateful for that.
Our guest today has been Ken Rusk, author of Blue Collar Cash, which is now available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or at your favorite local bookstore. Be sure to check out the show notes, where you can find information to help you dive deeper into the content. If you like this episode, be sure to share it with a friend, family member, or coworker. And until next time, this is Joe Cadwell reminding you to work safe, work smart, and stay union strong.